The following Dharma talk was given by Bear Gokhan Bonnebaker at Zen Mountain Monastery. Gokhan Osho is a Dharma holder and priest in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered freely. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
A couple of weeks ago, I gave a talk on the path, the Eightfold Path, and particularly on right understanding the first of the factors of the path. And so I wanted to continue with the path. This is the Buddha's Eightfold Path. He said, wherever the Noble Eightfold Path is practiced, joy, peace, and insight are there. Where is that? He said that this was a path to the liberation from suffering, to freedom from suffering. I think it's important to remember that. That's what the path is. He said that there is suffering, there is a cause, and because there is a cause, because it is caused, created, it can be liberated, not created. He said there is a way, there is a path. And I think it's important to appreciate that there is a way. There is a way. The old Eightfold Path is right understanding, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. And this can be divided into three sections: the wisdom factors, right understanding, right intention; the morality factors, right speech, right action, right livelihood; and concentration factors, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. And so the path begins with wisdom, with right understanding. We need some understanding, some instruction, some guidance. How do we start? What do we do? And so we begin with some intellectual understanding, some ideas. Maybe with some reflection on those ideas so that we have some trust, some conviction. Yes, this makes sense. And then we practice and develop our own wisdom, our own understanding that is not an idea, our own right understanding, our own understanding becoming the Buddha's right understanding. And in the original teachings, right understanding is understood as understanding the Four Noble Truths. And that is held in understanding of karma, cause and effect. That is part of right understanding. And I would say that maybe part of that understanding of cause and effect, or also holding right understanding, is the understanding that to change, to liberate suffering, we have to do something different. We have to do something different, be willing to do something different. This is the practice part of the path. It is a path of practice, a sense of doing something different, finding a different way. We've been doing things in our confused understanding, acting out of our confused understanding, and maybe seeing that that doesn't work. How How can we use our minds differently? It is an eightfold path. We need the whole of the path, each factor, so that we can work with the whole of ourselves. The factors of the path, the steps of the path, they overlap each other, interpenetrate. You know, I was thinking here in Sesshin, the beginning of the week, the precautions we say, we let go of other areas of training, other gates of training, so that we can focus entirely on Zazen, give ourselves to our Zazen. And that's true. There's a real opportunity in Sesshin to just give yourself over to your Zazen practice and to let that be with you throughout the day, throughout the week. And also to see all the other different practices that we take up. Kinhin, caretaking, orioki, liturgy, face-to-face teaching. We receive talks. The fact that we practice together. Working with the whole of ourselves. And so the second wisdom factor is right intention. And I talked a little bit about this in my previous talk. I mostly talked about right understanding. I thought this talk was going to kind of touch on right intention and then move on to right speech, but it seems that I have another talk about right intention. That's what came out. So right intention or right thought, a wisdom factor. And so again, the practice of the path is held in the understanding of cause and effect. And I think maybe this is the emphasis of right intention, of this factor of the path, this step of the path, bringing our attention to the study of cause and effect, the truth of cause and effect, to the study of what is skillful and what is not. If I do this, what is the result? If I do that, what is the result? Tighter or looser? More struggle, less struggle? Good for me, good for others? Dada Roshi used to say, what you do and what happens to you are the same thing. What you do and what happens to you are the same thing. That's one of those things that he said over and over again. How are we creating our life? Are we creating it based in a clear understanding of how things work, how we are? We're creating our life based in right understanding? Often, not really. And the Buddha said, when we're not, then we're creating suffering. We're creating struggle. We are struggling unnecessarily. And so right intention is pointing to the power of mind, the power of thought, the fact that we create karma, we have an effect. We have an effect on ourselves. We have an effect on others. We create with thoughts, words, and actions. And it all starts with mind. It's kind of all mind. Can you see that? You see in your Zazen how you can create a whole world. You do create whole worlds. I think that's what we're always doing. And the power of intention. So the teachings on right intention point particularly to the three poisons, point to craving. What do we create? How is it when we act out of craving, greed, desire? Pointing to anger, ill will, aversion, fear. How is it when we act out of anger or fear, out of ill will? How is it when we act out of the opposite? And so the teachings of right intention point to the intention of renunciation, which is pointing us to this is how do we turn craving, the mind of craving, and the create and what we create from the mind of craving. Teaching point to the intention of non-ill will. A little bit of an awkward translation, but non-ill will, the intention of non-ill will, the intention of compassion, pointing to how do we turn anger and ill will? How do we turn fear, aversion? And so pointing us to look, we have to know our mind. It probably doesn't feel like you go around very often with the intention, oh, now I'm going to be mean. Now I'm going to say something harsh. I'm going to hurt someone's feelings. Not a conscious intention. But knowing our mind, am I scared? Am I irritated? Am I in a hurry? Am I anxious? Do I feel attacked, defensive? Am I craving? Is there something that I want? Do I know my mind? When I am scared or in a hurry or anxious, what comes out? What happens? How do I act? How do I speak? Can I hear what comes out? How do we turn the mind? So during the week, during the day, to listen to the liturgy, there's a lot of bad intention in the liturgy. Parts that we are speaking ourselves, chanting ourselves, and parts that the liturgist is chanting for us, expressing on our behalf. The Meal Gatha, the work service, Four Immeasurables, Bodhisattva vows, expressing intention, maybe cultivating intention, helping us, reminding us. What does it mean when we take a meal? We say that we are eating for all beings, that we eat to stop evil and practice good. How is it that our work is a compassionate offering? Say it's a compassionate dana. Is it? How is it when we forget our intention? How do we forget? It's a right intention. It's kind of asking, what do you want to create? This part of the path, what do you want to create? Understanding cause and effect, knowing that you are creating. Right intention is also sometimes translated as right thought. It's pointing us to the power of our thoughts, the importance of working with our thoughts, seeing the mind. It is all mind. There is working with thoughts just as thoughts. So we get the simple instruction in Zazen to see thoughts, to acknowledge them, to take responsibility for them, and to let them go. What does that mean to take responsibility for our thoughts? I don't know if I remember that from my very first beginning instruction, but I remember that from, I think maybe we used to say that more. I think one of the seniors used to say that a lot when I was first here. And I always had a bit of a question there. Sometimes when I say it myself, I have a little bit of a question. What is it to take responsibility for a thought? What is that sort of part of our practice? There is simply seeing thoughts. Am I actually seeing thoughts? Am I actually letting go? Am I actually meeting my mind? Not as an idea, not in talking to myself about it, but directly, am I meeting my mind? There is a kind of private honesty needed for practice. I was thinking about a fellow student who I was talking to and just asking, you know, what brought you to practice? How did you start? And they said that they, when they received beginning instruction and started doing zazen, they really realized that if they were honest, they couldn't get to one. I appreciated that. There is the taking responsibility of seeing. They're your thoughts. Nobody else is having those thoughts in your mind. We have different thoughts, different patterns of thought. They didn't come from somewhere else. In the Mondo last week, I read this quote from Ayakema. She says, instead of acknowledging suffering and meeting ourselves with compassion, we try to escape as quickly as possible by developing self-pity or getting distracted or making someone else responsible for it. And she also says, when you blame things on someone else, on the situation, it feels like it's freeing you, but really it's disempowering. And she says, this isn't Buddhist practice. Pretty blunt. Dada Roshi used to talk about this. Another thing that he would say over and over again, when you take responsibility, you empower yourself to do something. To do something different, to let go. I think often he was talking about taking responsibility for our speech, for our action. There's a way in which it's easier to see that, to feel that, to see the effect. What is it to take responsibility in this, just in our own mind, in this just simple meeting our mind, meeting our thoughts, meeting our mind, meeting our feelings, meeting ourselves here in our zazen, then what? How do we meet ourselves? I think it's kind of a question, it's like, are we actually practicing? We have to find our way in here. It's kind of the crux of the whole thing. So there is working with thoughts just as thoughts. See thoughts, try to see them without judgment. Without judgment for the content of the thoughts. Just see and let go. Allowing thoughts to arise, not suppressing in any way. The Chan teacher, Rebecca Lees, talks about thoughts, and she, one of the things that she says over and over again is not a problem. Not a problem. She talks about let through, let be, let go. I did a week-long retreat with her, and she kind of steps, the retreat is kind of sequential. And she didn't talk about letting go until like the fourth or fifth day. I was like, wait a minute, we got to be letting go. Let through, let arise, let be. And she says she gives that, she makes that emphasis because we are so prone, used to repressing, not seeing our thoughts, not seeing, which means not seeing what's going on in here, not feeling our feelings. We can't see what we're not seeing. How do we allow that? We don't know what we're not feeling. How do we find that, feel that? And I say this in the context of right intention, because if we don't know, if I don't know how I'm feeling, if I don't know what I'm thinking, that's, in a sense, that's where the intention is. Then I'm acting blind. And there's also in right thought, again, held in the understanding and the truth of cause and effect. And so working with our thoughts, we can get to know our own habits of thought and see, oh, this creates that. This leads to that. This perpetuates that. Particular causes lead to particular effects. Particular thoughts have a particular effect. Seeing for ourselves how desire has power. Seeing for ourselves how anger and aversion and ill will have power. And the thoughts have feelings that go along with them. We can get to know that, see that. When we're angry, there are thoughts, often, usually. And their feelings and energies moving through our body that go together. When we're thinking pleasurable thoughts, same thing. They're feelings that come along with. What are we creating? And so the intention of renunciation, again, the intention of compassion and non-ill will, so we can work with these particular energies, these particular habits of thought. You know, and I was thinking with desire, grasping, craving, with pleasurable thoughts that we go back to over and over again. Sometimes it's pretty obvious, right? It's like romance and love and sex and vacation and food and, right? Kind of like the obvious things. And sometimes it's not so obvious. Sometimes session comes when we're working on the budget, when I'm working on the budget. And it's like, that could be really juicy for me. Like, I will go back to that over and over again. Right? You might have your own sort of idiosyncratic thing that you turn to. Right? So to look, like, why do you keep going back to that? It's creating something in you. And it may not be obvious how that is suffering. It might be helpful to ask, is this actually like giving me what I want? to really kind of look at that. And there also, I did the introduction to the One Continuous Thread on Monday night, and one of the guidelines is to practice simplicity of mind. And someone asked, what does that mean? And it was a good question. What is it to practice simplicity of mind? Something to explore, right? It's like what so much of our thinking is really not necessary. We're just like keeping ourselves company. What happens when we, how is it when we just allow the mind to be simpler, more quiet, not complicated? Is that more natural? What is our experience then as we meet things? And working with anger, with ill will, with fear. We could work with countering the energy of our thought patterns with something more helpful. Seeing critical thoughts, ill will, complaining, maybe about someone. Maybe you've had complaints about someone during session. What about offering something different? Understanding that thought creates, is having an effect. Is that the mind you want to be living in? About offering that person, may they be well. May they be at ease. And how about towards ourselves? Hojin Sensei at the beginning of the week said, don't go after yourself. How is it that you go after yourself? Do you know? Can you hear the story that you tell? The words that you use? What if you offered yourself something different to turn that habit? To try something different? Right intention, right thought. For ourselves, turning that, taking care, that intention here, and for others. They're connected. The next factors of the path are the morality, sometimes called the moral discipline factors. Right speech, right action, right livelihood. And I just wanted to sort of like touch on those next factors. I feel like, right, so we can see that the path is pointing us to thought, speech, and action, the ways that we create. They go together. And so just to sort of like put half a foot on these next steps of morality and feel, how is that? Is there resistance to morality, to hearing moral discipline? I feel that. I have felt that. A connotation, a sort of, that sound like obligation? Does that sound like being told what to do? Religious teachings on morality have been used to oppress, to repress our natural humanity, expression. The teachings of morality in Buddhism are not about being obedient, but about harmony. There's another translation or word of harmony or coordination. I thought that was interesting. They are part of this liberative path, your liberative path. They're for you, pointing to how to live in accord, how to manifest our lives in a way that is in accord with right understanding, with the way things are. They're to help us find our natural way of being, based in wisdom. To help us understand how to act in accord with wisdom, as an expression of wisdom. And so the morality factors are for us, and of course they are for others. How are these connected? I recently kind of stumbled on this chapter in the Avatamsaka Sutra called the Purifying Practice chapter. And the Avatamsaka Sutra is this vast sutra. It's like 1,000 pages long, and it is vast in its depictions are vast. They're like worlds within worlds and vast assemblies of bodhisattvas and all and other beings and jewels and parasols and pavilions, and it's vast. And I'm never really, it's kind of, because it's so vast, it's like, how do you enter? But a couple of things have sort of pointed me there recently. Hojin Sensei talked about Indra's net at the beginning of the week. Right? Speaking to interdependence, that is sort of the teaching in the Avatamsaka. In this chapter on purifying practice, a bodhisattva asks Manjushri a question. Asks Manjushri, how may an enlightening being, a practitioner, attain harmless, correct, right, blameless, perfect, physical, mental, and verbal action? And the question actually goes on for over a page. Really, he's asking, this enlightening being is asking Manjushri, how do we practice the path? How do we accomplish the way? Live the way? And Manjushri responds with 15 pages of verses which address all of the just mundane things that we do in our lives. Walking up a hill, walking down a hill, entering a hall, climbing stairs, using a toothbrush, using the bathroom. And when I found this chapter, I was partly amazed because Dogen Zenji, the founder of Japanese Zen, used a lot of these verses in his teaching. So some of you will recognize, right, he has a teaching on using the bathroom, on using the tooth stick, which is the ancient version of a toothbrush. And I'll admit that at first I was like, wait a minute, he plagiarized. But then I went back to his fascicle and he cites his source. It comes from the Avatamsaka. So I wanted to read some of these and end with that. And You know, so I was thinking, how is this? Because I think these are a bridge from right intention into right action, right speech. And so again, to listen to our liturgy, the intentions that are expressed, to, you know, part of the way Dogen uses these verses is in the context of bringing our awareness to activity, to simple activity, everyday activity. We say in the work service, wondrous. Our actions, our activities are wondrous in their simplicity, just as they are. And so we practice that. We practice coming close, being intimate with what's right in front of you, with just what you're doing. Sesshin is so simple, and it's just right here. And also, to again appreciate, so there is just doing zazen. Trust that. Trust that. Trust your zazen. Give yourself over to your zazen. To see for yourself. And there are other ways of working with our mind, of opening and softening and loosening, of being intimate. So these are just some selections from Manjushri's response. And so, again, Manjushri's been asked, how shall an enlightening being, that's you, how should they practice the path? How should they act? Manjushri says, when putting on a belt, they should wish that all beings bundle the roots of goodness and not let them be lost. When putting on an outer garment, they should wish that all beings attain supreme bases of goodness and reach the other shore of the teaching. Putting on monastic robes, they should wish that all beings enter the foremost rank and attain imperturbability. Taking a toothstick in hand, they should wish that all beings attain the wonderful teaching and be ultimately pure. When chewing the toothstick, they should wish that all beings be harmonious and pure in mind, biting through all afflictions. When going to the toilet, they should wish that all beings reject greed, hatred, and folly, and clear away sinful things. When going to wash thereafter, they should wish that all beings speedily go to the transmundane. When washing off the body's filth, they should wish that all beings be pure and harmonious, and ultimately without defilement. When they eat, they should wish that all beings feed on the joy of meditation and be sated by delight in truth. When tasting flavor, they should wish that all beings attain the supreme savor of Buddhahood and be filled with the elixir of immortality. When the meal is finished, they should wish that all beings accomplish all their tasks and fulfill the Buddha's teachings. When they enter a bath, they should wish that all beings enter omniscient knowledge, knowing past, present, and future are equal. While washing their bodies, they should wish that all beings be undefiled in body and mind, radiantly pure inside and out. In the blistering heat of the day, they should wish that all beings cast off myriad afflictions, putting an end to them all. When the heat subsides and begins to cool, they should wish that all beings experience the highest truth and be ultimately cool.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.